Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. And yesterday was Evolution Sunday. Did you check that out? They called it Evolution Sunday, February 12th, 2006, marking the birthday of Charles Darwin, the 197th anniversary of the birth of the father of Darwinism. And to mark that event, 365 congregations around the country held Evolution Sunday events as they taught their congregations, for example, that we have evolved from animals, that human beings have. Now, contrary to all that, Denver Bible Church, we held our own Evolution Sunday event where we went to the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, and led by BC Tours with Bill Jack and Rusty Carter, we toured, about 70 of us. We had a tremendous time. In fact, the chief curator of the museum, Dr. Kirk Johnson, tagged along, and he joined one of the groups. We split in two groups because there were so many of us. He joined one of the groups because the Colorado Springs Gazette Telegraph had a reporter and a photographer there for the whole tour. So now let's go to the phones, and I want to welcome Rusty Carter, one of the BC Tours guides, to Bob Inyart Live. Rusty, how are you?
Good, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, especially after an afternoon yesterday at the Denver Museum.
Yes, that was something else. That's a lot of people you guys brought through.
Well, yeah, and what an enjoyable time. That's an evolution museum, but we got a creation tour at an evolution museum. Rusty, can you tell us about BC Tours? How you guys have been doing this for years, right?
You bet. We've been doing this since 1988 when the Ramses exhibit was here in Denver. Bill Jack started giving tours, and he trained me, and we've been giving tours ever since on science, evolution, creation, art, zoo, animals, and state capital and whatnot.
And you go up to the Dinosaur Ridge, too, right?
Yes, we do. That's seasonal. It's open from April to October, I think.
Mm-hmm. Where we have dinosaur footprints in the hogbacks here along the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
Right.
But so let's talk about the Denver Museum, and what a fascinating time, because their chief curator, Dr. Johnson, Kirk Johnson, joined. He wasn't with your group. He was with our group that was led by Bill Jack. So later on in the show, I'm going to describe a conversation that we had with the curator after the tour was over. But
right.
There was a few things we saw that were pointed out, and I'd like to mention them and get your take on them.
Okay.
There was one thing, you know, a lot of the presentations that man has evolved from animals, they're full, like they span the size of a wall from ceiling to floor, and down closer to the floor, they have artwork aimed at children. And so the adults are looking up high and reading the fine print, sort of, and the kids are at the bottom. And they had a cartoon of a fish looking at a man smiling with a big set of teeth.
Right.
And you remember what the caption said under that?
Yeah, it says, your teeth came from scales.
Yeah, okay. your scales evolved into teeth.
Exactly.
And with some of the things, they'd say something that was obviously not true, and they put a question mark after it. But this, they said, scales evolve into teeth, and they put an exclamation mark after it with a cartoon to children saying to kids that this is a fact that we know as scientists, that scales, fish scales, evolved into teeth.
What they do, Bob, is they jam this information down the eyeballs of students in the public schools, in the museums, to the movies, all over the place. We see it everywhere in our culture. And here is an example of the museum trying to put forth their lies in a comic fashion so the children leave and take home this message.
Now, it seems not only, I mean, there would be enormous debate among evolutionists. There's no way evolutionists would all agree that scales evolved into teeth. I mean, it's a wild stretch. It's a wild theory. But to present it as fact. So after the debate, I asked Dr. Kirk Johnson, he designed a good...
Did.
Tell us what part of the museum he designed.
He was in charge of putting together and overseeing the prehistoric journey, which was I think it's about 10 years old or older.
Yeah, and, well, you're exactly right. He did that.
It's,
you know,
it cost over $7 million.
Yeah, and it's received awards.
Right, and that was taxpayers' money.
Yeah, and so in there is this, your scales evolved into teeth directed at kids. And I asked Dr. Kirk Johnson, how can you say that as though it were a fact? How can you possibly present that? And his answer was, well, there's a lot in our culture that we believe that we don't know to be facts. And so it was a very unscientific answer. You know, some people believe in aliens. Other people believe Elvis is alive or that we never went to the moon. And we put in our science museum that scales evolved into teeth. Hey, it's just part of our culture.
So he's admitting right there that his belief of evolution is a philosophical, religious belief.
Well,
he wouldn't say that, but that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, because to say this, it's like, trust us, children. Trust us. We know that scales have evolved into teeth. We thought it was just extraordinary in how unfair it was to kids. And the idea that scales on the outside of a fish's body would migrate inside its body and develop blood vessel systems and all the complexity of teeth, and to present it as though that was a done deal. They figured it all out, and they know that's true.
We had a funny situation happen at that particular stop, that display. We had a dentist with us, and he read that before we got to it, and he fell over laughing. He thought that was the funniest thing he's ever seen, yet it's sad.
Yeah.
Because he knows better, and there's no way that teeth and scales are the same under the microscope.
Oh, it's
different.
It's just bizarre. But then, how about this? They had what looked like an article from a National Geographic, and it said life created in the lab, but then there was a question mark after it.
Right. My favorite exhibit, the Stanley Miller project, or the test tube invention that he created to try to simulate life in the laboratory.
Right.
Real quick, he puts the basic ingredients of life in a small globe and heats it up, and it condenses it. As it evaporates, it condenses, goes through a larger globe, he zaps that with electricity, simulating lightning, and it doesn't create anything but amino acids.
Yeah, amino acids are a building block of life, but
right,
they're not life, they're acids.
Didn't create life, but he created 3% amino acids and 97% sludge.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they were all the right kind of amino acids, but he created amino acids.
And he basically threw that argument out. He didn't use that to prove anything, yet the evolutionists have pulled it back in and used it in their museums to try to push this down our eyeballs once again.
Yeah, so they said, and they made it look like it was deceptively made to look like a National Geographic headline.
Yeah.
Because of the colors and the form of the magazine cover that this article was supposedly in, which it was not. But it said life created in the lab with a question mark, as though there's some scientists who say that Miller created life. No, he didn't create life. It didn't reproduce. It didn't. It wasn't able to expel waste and pull in raw materials and process them. They were just acids. He made acids.
He did, and you know, it's funny because when I had half the group yesterday giving a tour, your people that go to your church, they were just laughing and thought that was funny in a way.
Yeah.
But they're very well educated. You've done a great job educating the people. They could have given the tour themselves.
Well, that's so kind of you, Rusty Carter. Denver Bible Church, we love science and creation science, and we study evolution. We have series sometimes from the pulpit on Sunday mornings on creation evolution. It's a lot of fun.
It is, and your group struck up some interesting conversations with Dr. Johnson at the end, and it wasn't just two or three of you people. It was 10 or 15 people listening in on a conversation,
mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of people want to picture Christians as a bunch of Bible-bashing religious fanatics, but you guys were having a great conversation with Kirk.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. In fact, the way the conversation ended, was Kirk Johnson. He's the chief curator. Their website has him prominently, chief curator, Dr. Kirk Johnson. He got his doctorate in geology and paleobotany from Yale University. And so he was objecting that we believed in certainty. He didn't like that as a scientist. So I asked him if he believed in truth, and he was equivocating. He wouldn't answer directly that he believed in truth. So I said, well, Kirk, do you believe that you exist? I thought we could find some common ground, and there at least if he knew he existed, then he believed that was true. I said, Kirk, do you exist? Do you believe that you exist? He said, well, I don't know. I think so, but I don't know. And I said, Kirk, if you don't know that you exist, how could you possibly? I said, well, first of all, I said, you're being intellectually immature, because no one that doesn't exist can assert that they don't exist or that they doubt they exist. I think, therefore, I am. He said, well, could you tell me anything you know to be true? I said, yeah, I exist. The sun rose yesterday. I know those things to be true. And I pressed him, do you exist? You're just playing a game with us? And he could not answer that he knew he existed. And we pointed out, this is what atheism and evolution does. It leads people to gross ignorance. Because when you don't have a foundation on God, you have no foundation for science or knowledge or reason.
Yeah, that's really a good point. It's very difficult to have a discussion with someone that is so irrational in their beliefs, at best. And, you know, Bill Jack offered and challenged Dr. Johnson to a debate held at the museum. He would like to have an evolution creation debate at the museum open to the public. And I'm not sure what Kirk's response was, except that he was rather stunned by it.
Yeah, by the offer. And what a wonderful debate that would be. And so maybe there's people in the audience who'd like to call the museum. Just go to their website and the Denver Museum of Nature and Science and ask that they would consider holding a debate on creation evolution. Boy, that would be wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah, I think people should call up Dr. Johnson and leave a message with him on his voicemail or talk to him and encourage him. You know, we do, as Christians, encourage open-mindedness when it's based on the biblical Christian view. I wonder if Dr. Johnson would be open-minded on his end and have a debate and a discussion, just like Paul did in Acts chapter 17.
Yeah, that's right, on Mars Hill in Athens. In fact, Rusty, you didn't know this, but our church is going to Greece in May, a Bible tour of Greece for 2 weeks, May 18th. We're going to have a great time. We have room for how many more people? Two more. We have 23 people, and we're going to max out our bus and take 25 people.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Okay, so Rusty, the last thing I wanted to ask you about was in the museum, there's a section titled How Evolution Works. And I have to tell you, I was in shock
oh, yes.
To see what they presented as an example of how evolution worked. Now, evolution, some species, it's believed that they evolve into other species, right? And creatures that had no wings gradually evolved wings. And through mutation or their changes in the gene pool that bring about new functionality and even new species, they believe. So how does that work? What did they tell us?
Well, first of all, I want to make it clear to people listening that throughout the history of the the educators of evolutionists, this theory and many theories have been thrown out and been discredited by world magazines like Newsweek and Time and National Geographic. This is one of them, the peppered moth theory. The idea that the moths were a light color back in the 1800s and were camouflaged from getting eaten by the birds, and the brown moths were picked off, and then as the pollution increased over 100 years, the bark on the trees darkened, and the light moths were not any longer camouflaged, and the dark moths were camouflaged. So the population shifted from light-colored moths to the dark colored moths.
Yeah, and this suppose this is in England, and they're the peppered moths.
Right, and besides some of the obvious problems that people have with this, whether it was a fraud or people pinned up moths, the point is, for it to be evolution, you'd have to have one species changing into an entirely different species.
Yeah, or developing new traits. But they, even those who promote this theory, they say they're started out with light and dark colored moths, but then with the Industrial Revolution, you ended up with more of the one color than the other color.
Right, and it's not an example of evolution. It's an example of natural selection, where the moths just change color, not traits, or into a different species.
Yeah, so do they believe that the moths mutated and their DNA acquired information, and at the end of this process, their DNA was enhanced somehow? They don't believe that.
Well, and this argument's used by evolutionists, just like the Stanley Miller life being created in the laboratory. It's used all the time.
It's just absolutely bizarre that would be like saying in Denver, if the population of blacks in Denver went from 10% to 30 years later, 15%, they would say that's proof of evolution. That's not proof of evolution.
Right.
When you have a demographic shift in a population, that's not proof of evolution.
Yeah, not the kind of evolution they're talking about.
No, not at all. I mean, it's just... Well, right,
it's
exactly.
Absurd.
Yeah, that species evolve into other species. It's just tragic that they would use something that has been discredited by evolutionists for decades now. The peppered moths show no evolution whatsoever. And the fact that they would use that shows me that Dr. Kirk Johnson, when he is designing this presentation, he couldn't come up with a good example of how evolution works. So he used something that is utterly inept and does not illustrate evolution.
It's the same old arguments out of the old playbook from the evolutionists years and years ago that they rely on. And that's why we love doing these tours. While most creationists get upset about the museum having all these displays, we like to offer tours and give people a chance to kind of review what they've said, laugh at it a little bit, and give a biblical perspective to it.
So BC Tours is at creationtours.com, your website?
Yes, Creation Tours with an S on the end, plural.
Creationtours.com. You want us to give out a phone number?
Sure.
Because let me say, if there's anybody in the audience who would like to take a tour of the Denver Museum, then you call, and it's just a wonderful tour, a biblically correct tour of Colorado's major attractions.
Yes.
So that phone number?
It's 303-978-9615.
Okay, 303-978-9615. And this is Rusty Carter. And then you work there with Bill Jack.
Yes, and the other person involved is Tyson Thorne.
Mm-hmm.
And we three run the show, and you can call, and we'll get you scheduled for a tour with your church or school group.
All right. Rusty, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
God bless you. I appreciate that so much. That's BC Tours at creationtours.com. And they charge $5 a person. So you pay to get into the museum. It depends on what it is you're touring with them. But they charge for their tour guide service. And it's well worth it, $5 a person. Okay. So our phone number, 800-8-N-YARDS. That's 800-836-9278, 800-836-9278. And our telethon, we're now at 10% of our goal. Now we have a goal of raising $10,000 to help keep Bob and Yart live on the radio for another year. And we're at 10%, and we have a long way to go. Boy, do we need your help. So please call in or go online to KGov, KGOV.com. And if you can help us, you know, many people help with $25, $35, $50, and others with $100. Undoubtedly, there's someone out there who can help with $500 or even $1,000. And we've never had anybody give $2,000 at a telethon, but that would be 20% of our goal. That would put us up to about a third. So if you're out there, if you can help in any way, we'll be so thankful to help Bob and Yurt Live stay on the air. 800-836-9278. So if you'd like to call in, you could use that number to call in or to pledge or give a gift. 800-836-9278. So the conversation after the tour, now this, the curator of the Denver Museum, Dr. Kirk Johnson, he joined us for the whole tour. It was about an hour and a half or so. And we went through the museum, and it was really startling to see the things that were there. The deceptive things, things that are wild theories that were presented as fact. Like scales, fish scales evolved into teeth. That's just tragic. And life created in the lab with a question mark, as though there's a question. There is no question. No credible scientist says that amino acids fabricated in a test tube are alive. They're not alive. It's not life. They had no DNA code. There's no instructions there on how to reproduce. They're just acids. And how evolution works, showing the peppered moths, that's not evolution. If birds are eating more light-colored moths than dark-colored moths, that's not evolution. That's birds being hungry. So it was absolutely tragic. So it came down to it, and with the reporter for the Colorado Springs Gazette standing on the fringe and waiting to interview Dr. Kirk Johnson, like Rusty Carter was saying, about a dozen of us, we were having a discussion with Dr. Johnson, and Doug McBurney, he said to him, he said, you know, I get a bit angry when I walk through this museum because of the deception and the lies and presenting these things to kids as though they're facts. And so, and then I pointed out to Kirk Johnson that saying that scales evolve into teeth as though it were a fact. And he used the excuse, well, he said, our culture, there's so much we believe that we don't really know. And so as a scientist, Dr. Johnson, curator of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, don't you have an obligation to tell kids this is a theory? But they tell these things to kids as though they were facts. And so I got the strong sense that Dr. Kirk Johnson didn't like anything being considered a fact. He said to me, do you know anything that you know for certain? I said, well, the sun rose yesterday. And it was like he wasn't persuaded by that. So I said, well, I know I exist. And I asked him, do you exist? And he would not answer, yes. He told us he didn't know. He did not know if he exists. And is he just being coy or silly? Well, we've asked now, what, 100 people this question over the years? Do you exist? They don't know. It used to be 10, 15 years ago on the air, you asked them, do you believe in absolute right and wrong? And they said no, and it was somewhat startling, shocking to the audience. Well, we've gone down that path of relativism and atheism and evolution for so long now that people are reaching a critical mass of sheer ignorance. And so we ask this curator of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, Dr. Kirk Johnson, Dr. Johnson, do you exist? He said, well, I think so, but I'm not sure I think so. I said, you think so? Dr. Johnson, could you answer without equivocating? Do you exist? He said, I can't. No, for sure, I think so. Now, that's irrational. I think, therefore, I am. I think, therefore, I am. If you don't exist, you can't deny you exist. So don't worry about that as one of the possibilities in your confused life. If you don't exist, you can't doubt you exist. You can't deny that you exist. So Dr. Kirk Johnson would not admit that he exists. And I said, if you don't know if you exist, how do you know that scales evolved into teeth? How do you know that if you don't know that you exist? If you don't know that you exist, how is it that you're qualified to present science, objective findings, if you don't even know that you exist? And I said, Dr. Johnson, you intuitively fear God, and so you're refusing to admit truth is because you know where truth will lead you. Truth will lead you to the God of truth. And that's where he doesn't want to go. So to throw an intellectual tantrum and say, I don't know if I exist. Well, and they're afraid if they admit that, what that means. That means there is truth. And they don't want to admit truth. They worship relativism. In uncertainty, in a lack of knowledge. If you say to Dr. Johnson, the earth orbits around the sun, we know that, absolutely. He'll say, no, we don't. We don't know that the sun revolves around the earth. If we say the earth is round, he'll say, well, we don't know that absolutely. We don't know anything absolutely. And so his atheism evolution has brought him to the place that millions have gone to utter ignorance. And so I said to the reporter from the Colorado Springs Gazette, I said, please. Now, he said, Dr. Johnson, can I interview you now? I said, please, Mr. Reporter, please get him to answer this question. Put it in your article. Whether the chief curator of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, whether he knows if he exists or not. Please put that in your article. And he, it's sort of like he was, I don't know, chuckling or what, a little bit. And I said, please, think of your Pulitzer Prize. This will be big. You'll break the biggest story of the year that most museum curators do not know if they exist. You got to do it. And so then Kirk Johnson asked me about a molecule of life, DNA. He said, what's the difference between DNA and sand on a beach? Grains of sand on a beach, it's all the same thing. And I said, no, it's not all the same thing. The grains of sand on the beach, it doesn't matter what order they're in because they're not conveying information like the alphabet letters of the DNA double helix. They convey information. He said, but what's the difference really? It's just atoms and elements. It doesn't matter. We said, yes, it does matter. If you mix up the order of the amino acids in a DNA strand, you'll break the genes. They won't function anymore. But you could rearrange the grains of sand on a beach, and it doesn't matter because they're not lined up to convey information. And he actually either pretended or could not understand the difference between information and random grains of sand on a beach. And he asked me, he said, what's really the difference between sand on a beach and DNA? I said, Dr. Johnson, if you can't answer that, you should not be working at a science museum. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school, Maranatha. And visit us there at Denver Bible Church this Sunday morning or Sunday evening at 72nd and Oak in Arvada. That's Denver Bible Church meeting at Maranatha.